From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Don Williams from Lubbock Avalanche Journal, welcoming you into the Red Raiders football podcast. This is a midweek edition. Hopefully, you caught our early week edition a couple of days ago. Again, joined as usual by AJ Media Sports Editor Carlos Silva Jr. We are closing in on game time. Texas Tech opening on Saturday night, 6 p.m. against the University of Houston down at NRG Stadium. And Carlos, I guess, started off, I'll ask you, what's one thing that you're most interested to see on Saturday night from the Red Raiders?
I know we were talking about this before the podcast, Don, but I think the one thing I want to see, and I think it's kind of, you know, Captain Obvious, as a former coach used to tell me all the time, but how is Tyler Shutt going to perform for you? I think he's a guy that has had a lot of fanfare, has had a lot of great things talked about, written about him. Now it's time to see how he goes with the lights turned on, so to speak. And I think that's something I certainly want to see. The other, just to kind of make it an A-B situation, because I know you hate it when I don't answer the question correctly, but Strider Thompson. I think him coming back, potentially playing in that game, I think that could be a difference maker for Texas Tech, even though they are deep at the running back position. But to answer your question, Tyler Shuck, and just to see how he performs in that contest.
Of course, I'm interested in Tyler Shuck also. I'm interested from a standpoint of what is Tyler's judgment and decision-making like, because there seems to be no doubt that he has all the physical tools. Otherwise, he wouldn't be being talked about by NFL analysts as a potential high draft pick or even first-round draft pick. The knock on him seems to be when he tries to force things, you know, when he throws passes that he shouldn't throw, maybe tries to fit, mm-hmm. et cetera, a little too tight, that sort of thing. So I'm kind of interested in, you know, he checks all the boxes, I think, everywhere else in terms of how physical he is, in terms of how fast he is, in terms of what kind of teammate he's been in such a short time. Again, the whole question on him seems to be, what is his judgment and decision-making like? And that'll be, of course, so much dependent on that. So that's one thing for me. Another thing, we're really interested, I think everybody is, in all these transfers, because it's one of Matt Wells' ways of doing business. And we saw in his first 2 years, he added four, five, six guys each of those first couple of years. And as I said, they pretty much hit on all of those guys. All of those guys have been contributors. None of those guys came in here and just washed out and didn't do anything. You have another class of transfers from the FBS who are, I would say, probably the most heralded group that they have had so far. And we'll talk a lot about, I'm sure, about the guys on defense. They've probably gotten the most attention, but I'm interested to see what caliber of player Kalen Geiger is, because he's a guy who, for those who don't know his story, he was a not recruited really at all coming out of high school at Fort Worth Paschal, walked on at Navarro. He actually went to a walk-on tryout at Blinn and didn't get a scholarship there, so he walked on at Navarro.
Junior colleges, for those that don't know.
And probably, and really his career has taken off ever since. He was literally one of the guys that all he needed was a chance, and he certainly made a lot happen with it. At Navarro, he became one of the top wide receivers in the country in JUCO, and they transferred to Troy, and he made first-team all-conference his junior year, and he made second-team all-conference last year, and he averaged about 70 catches. Again, two of those years were at Navarro, and two of those years were at Troy, and now, fifth year of college football, he is in the Big 12. So he's going to continue to face a higher level of competition. It's another jump for him. How will he respond? Now, you know, from what we have heard, it's a lot of good. And the thing that you hear, I think, most consistently about Kalen Geiger is his speed. He's one of the fastest guys on the team. And because he's a 5'10 guy, I think most of us, you know, just kind of automatically assumed he would play in the slot. And I think he has done that for a good portion of his college career. But Matt Wells wanted him on the outside because, with the exception of Eric Ezukanma, all the receivers on the outside are freshmen and sophomores, so they like this experience. So he's a guy that I'm interested to see how well he makes the jump up to Power Five football. You know, fifth-year senior, but his first time playing in the Power Five.
It's funny you bring up the transfer, Don, because I know we discussed this last year on the podcast when we were doing them during the COVID-19 season, but it's just interesting to see how things kind of fell in the right places, so to speak, for Texas Tech football with some of these transfers. You look at Tyler Shuck, maybe if they don't get a Boston College transfer, maybe he's not here in the Texas Tech Red Raiders. You look at Muddy Waters, maybe he doesn't decide to transfer despite having the Derrick Jones connection. You look at a Reggie Pearson, a guy, as you've detailed before, he had a very great career, helped Wisconsin to a 10-win season to the Rose Bowl, and then all of a sudden you see the unfortunate, journey that he's had to take to where football was taken away, and now it's coming back to him, and he's, as you've spoken to him, I've spoken to him, very grateful for the fact to be given that opportunity again. And I think just the stories behind some of these transfers are great, but I think that the one thing that you can take away from all of this is that, and I think you really kind of nailed it on the head, but they've hit on each of these guys compared to, I know a lot of people probably can make the take of, well, why don't you go for the high school route like you always do? Well, you got guys that are here for multiple years. It's not like you're getting guys that are one and dones like you typically would see from a grad transfer standpoint, like a Josiah Pierre. Or, you know, Reggie Pearson, I think, has a couple years as well.
Oh, he's got like 4 years he's a sophomore now, but all these guys who were in school last year will have that super senior option at the end of their career. So he's got 4 years to play for Tech if he wants.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing that really stands out to me is just the way that things have bounced right for Texas Tech in the transfer portal. And I know Keith Patterson's mentioned it. It's just the background checks they do, the making sure that they're going to fit the culture, they're going to be the right type of guy. And certainly from everything that we've heard from his teammates, his coaches, Sonny Cumbie, his offensive coordinator who just came in, Tyler Shuck has been the first guy in, the last guy out. It seems like he's a football junkie, as Matt Wells likes to use that terminology. You spoke to him during the press conference earlier this week, and he said he probably doesn't leave the facility till 9, and that's because, you know, he has more I forgot the term, but essentially he just has more things that he can use to maybe watch tape at a better rate or something like that compared to just being at home, you know, watching videos or something on a laptop.
Yeah, he's kind of had to navigate what seems to me to be a little bit of a tricky situation, because he comes in here with so much fanfare is probably too strong a word, but a whole lot of attention and a whole lot of expectations. And
that's
so
fair.
That kind of puts him into a kind of a tricky situation, because you figure, okay, there's other guys in the locker room who have played a lot of college football, and they're kind of wanting to see what is this guy all about, and why is he getting all this attention, and how does he handle it? But it seems like Shuck, from everything we've seen and everything we've heard, seems to be doing a good job of that. I think the main reason why is because he seems to be trying to incorporate other guys into his into his orbit, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How he stays late. You know, we saw him after practice one day when Sonny Cumbie was talking. The entire field was empty, but Tyler Shuck was out there throwing balls to Nehemiah Martinez and I think it's McLean. It was his other inside receivers, McLean Mannix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the walk-on inside receiver, about four inside receivers. They were the last guys out there on the field. And he's gotten a whole lot of attention through name, image, and likeness, and probably has had the most opportunities through that. But again, he's tried to incorporate his guys into it. Mm-hmm. I think he had a deal with one of the restaurants. And he worked it, it's our understanding from the offensive lineman, Tyler Shuck worked it out where the offensive lineman could get a free once a week at one of the restaurants. And so how better to kind of ingratiate yourself to your new team and say, okay, I'm getting benefits here, but I'm going to try to share it with you guys. And I'm getting attention here, but hey, I'm out here practicing with walk-on receivers, an hour or, 45 minutes after we're done.
not only that, but then it helps when you're helping out the guys that are blocking in front of you. So certainly that's going to be a good thing for him. But I think that the one thing that stood out to me as we kind of switch over to some stuff here for Tyler Shuck is when I saw that he was named a captain, I think that goes to show the type of effort that he showed behind the scenes to where, you know, you and I are able to go watch practices that are open to the media, but certainly behind closed doors, he did enough to where his teammates that, as you mentioned, Don, I mean, he literally, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he came 2 days after spring practice began.
Yeah, he was here for the third spring practice, Yep.
So, I mean, in that small amount of time, he made that type of impact. So, certainly, he had to, I mean, he was literally learning the offense, still trying to figure out his guys. And not only that, but then he still had to, as you said, ingratiate himself to the team. And I think that is just a testament to the type of work ethic that he's going to be showing throughout the year. And Sonny Cumby, you asked him if he kind of mimics him in that sense, and I think he kind of agreed. It's just the one thing that Sonny kind of joked about was the fact that he was a better athlete, which I think we can both agree on that for right now. But certainly when Sonny gives you that type of endorsement, that's a great thing. But I think to kind of switch over to things, Don, Tony Bradford Jr., we're speaking to him at the beginning of the week. One thing that stood out to me, and I think this goes to kind of what you're talking about with the transfers and kind of all the things that they've brought. Tony Bradford said two words that really stood out to me, and we've slowly kind of mentioned it, but I think it's coming to a head this year: competitive depth. I think that's something that Texas Tech has missed. I think you're seeing it in the quarterback room to where there are guys to where if your A game is not working, you can bring someone in and that guy can take your spot. I think that's something that hasn't happened in the last couple of years at Texas Tech. And I think that's some of the things that I know you've asked Coach Wells as to maybe how things have changed in terms of the culture for Texas Tech football. Tony Bradford gave us a little bit of nuggets to that, to where he kind of mentioned it's like, yeah, you can't take a playoff. There were some guys that kind of realized that and now they're gone type thing. So I thought that was a little bit of a eye-opener or ear-opener if you're listening to that, especially myself, because I think that just goes to show what Matt Wells and his coaching staff have been trying to do. They're trying to get guys that can obviously push each other. They're going to try and make each other better, which I know it sounds kind of Captain Obvious once again, but it's something that hasn't happened because you just haven't had either the type of transfers as we talked about or just the type of players that you needed. And I think that's certainly something that Tony Bradford brought up, and I think that's going to pay dividends for them going down the line, especially now that you have a routine or quote-unquote normal offseason now finally under Matt Wells. I think you're going to see some things at least turn positive when we do talk about their game against Houston.
Yeah, and I think he probably witnesses the competitive depth, obviously, on the defense. And I think that's true at a lot of positions on the defense. It's certainly true at his because he's playing nose tackle this year, sliding in from defensive tackle. And he and Jalen Hutchings are kind of going to split that position and have Troy Teo with them. So they have three guys who have all played and two guys who have been basically full-time starters in him and Hutchings. And I think you got depth at linebacker. I think you have depth at, I believe you have depth at cornerback.
Yeah, you got about 10 deep. I mean, if you're talking about it.
Could probably use a little more depth at safety, I think. And, you know, on the offense, they certainly could use more depth on the offensive line because once you get past the first five, I think, you know, Landon Peterson's got your backup at both guards and Ethan.
Yeah, that'll give you.
Ethan Cards, your backup at both tackles. And if they get any of those starting offensive linemen hurt, that's where this thing could go south because they're pretty thin. Beyond, I mean, they got about six or seven guys, and beyond that, they're pretty thin. So I think they still need depth there. And I think, you know, there's a lot of expectations for the outside receivers, but there's a bunch of guys there who have to prove it. I mean, we talked about, you know, Geiger is produced at Troy because of Common, the returning all Big 12. Now, people are all really eager to see J.J. Sparkman and Trey Cleveland and Loic Fungi and Jerron Bradley. But, again, yep. Those guys who you can count their – well, three of those four names I just mentioned have never caught a pass in college football yet. The other one has only caught about 8 or 10. So the depth at wide receiver, while it looks good on paper, and I think those guys have a bright future, they're guys who have to do it and need to do it this year.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, you got some other guys at the tight end position, Travis Coombs, who's going to be coming back. He's experienced. You got some other guys that we've heard about with Mason Tharp, Henry Teeter, who we spoke to, that's had a really good offseason. But the inside receivers, I think, is something that maybe we haven't really mentioned. I know we talked about it when some of the people were asking about some surprises or things that we looked at with the kicking game and stuff. We can get into that a little bit later. But I think McClain Mannix and Dalton Rigdon are set up for some pretty big years. I think they're both just really got some fires in their bellies, especially McClain Mannix. I was talking with him, and he just said he was just, you know, it was eating at him that he was on the bench the whole time with an injury. And he just feels like this is the year to where he wants people to realize, okay, I'm going to step up. I'm going to show this team why I was a great player at Nevada, why I came back to play in front of my friends and family. And I think that's something personal to him, you know, to take away or to take from what's now the now it's personal slogan and motto that Texas Tech is using. I certainly think McClain Mannix is one person that wants to do that. But I guess from your perspective, Don, kind of going from that to, I think the other thing to kind of go back to that first question you posed to me, the other thing I'm kind of looking at, if I'm really being honest, is that first kick by Jonathan Garibay. If he makes it or misses it, I'm kind of interested to see, okay, is it going to bug him? Because I honestly think Matt Wells is going to stick with him no matter what. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how the consistency or just how things kind of change with him if he does miss it. If he makes it, I think everything's good and gravy. Maybe if he misses one, makes one, I don't know. But I think that's going to be something to watch, because this could be a game, at least in my view, where it could be a 1-2 possession game early on. And if you don't extend the lead with a big play on offense, or maybe the defense steals a possession by creating a turnover against Houston, I think this could be something that could be a lot closer than people think.
Well, talking about Garibay for a moment, I mean, he was 15 out of 20 at his JUCO. Mm-hmm. He was 8 of 11 last year.
4 in that Baylor game, which I honestly believe that won him the job.
Yeah, well, he made his first 6. He made his first six last year. Beyond the Baylor game, he made his first 2, I think, the next week. Yeah. So I think he is probably – a guy who's sitting in a pretty good position. It would take some kind of real swoon for him not to be your kicker. And the other thing I think you gotta like about him is he has a strong leg, because you know, last 3 games, his longest kick against Baylor is 48 yards. His long against Oklahoma State was 44 yards. And his long against Kansas was 47 yards. So he's got the leg strength, and he was pretty consistent before he went 3 out of 6 against in that finale against KU last year. You touched on something I want to go back to, and you're talking about the inside receivers.
Mm-hmm.
He had Mannix, who kind of, he played only 3 games last year. And Matt Wells said it was a back issue that was bothering him. And then McClain also had a concussion that kept him from playing in the finale last year against Kansas. But he said, really, once he recovered from that, he's actually had 9 months where he's been, or whatever, 8 or 9 months where he's felt better than he's felt in 4 years. So he's really eager to go. And then Dalton Rigdon had a similar year last year, because Dalton, you know, took that helmet to helmet. He ended up at Iowa State, and he was out for a while, and that was his 5th concussion, he told me. And he considered giving up football because he got married this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go to pursue a law enforcement career, become a Texas Ranger. And he actually, back in December, looked like he probably was done. And then he said, you know, I kind of had a change of heart, decided that wasn't the right way to go out. Want to come back, give it a healthy season, and get to walk out on senior night at Jones Stadium. And now, you know, he's healthy. And so those guys, I think, feel like, I mean, in Mannix's case, you're talking a guy who's had a couple of 50 catch seasons up at Nevada. Yeah. In Dalton's case, 2 years ago, he caught 34 passes, 5 of them 4 for touchdowns, and about 4 or 5 were long touchdowns. So he's been a big play guy. So I think, combine them with Miles Price, and your 8 inside receivers feel like they're capable of a lot more than you saw last year.
Absolutely. And if anything, like I said, we'll see how the tight ends work. I know everyone's going to be focused on that. I don't think you have to look at the amount of targets that they have. I think you're going to look at the production that you get in the blocking game. I think that's going to be the biggest reason that you look at a Travis Kuntz or a Mason Tharp or even a Henry Teeter. They're all talking about Sonny's been challenging them to, you know, learn some routes and all that stuff. But their biggest thing is they got to block, because if they don't block, they're not going to be on the field. And I think that's the biggest thing to kind of watch for those guys.
Yeah, I think Kuntz has been here for a while now. You kind of know what he is. I think, you know, the question of the guy that people are eager to see is Mason Tharp, because he's 6'9" and 255 pounds or so. And that one open scrimmage that Tech had, caught a couple of passes, was kind of a nice kind of deep middle route where he reached out with one hand and kind of snagged it and pulled it in. And if you're tall, people are really interested in, yes, in what kind of player you're going to be. Now, I think the expectations for him are probably going to be a little unrealistic. I think a reasonable expectation for him this year is about 20 catches, 250 yards. If he's in that neighborhood, that's about what I would expect. But he is a really interesting prospect. You know, they continue to recruit this position and are hoping to find some players there who can make an impact. Because you're playing in the conference with Iowa State, which kind of had their tight ends are as good as anybody's in the country. And
Charlie Kolar's
the guy who gets all the attention. He's probably the All-America candidate. But then the last couple of years, they've had two big guys behind him were nearly as, certainly physically, very physically impressive guys. And so that's kind of what Texas Tech has been open for. And, Mason Tharp at least looks like a guy who might someday be a all-conference caliber tight end, perhaps.
No, absolutely. And I think that the one important thing before we kind of switch over to defense on this, I think I totally agree with you. I think if the offensive line can keep Shuck upright against a really good Houston defensive line with some guys that have been able to show that they can get into the backfield. And I apologize if I'm saying this name wrong, but I believe it's David Anini. Is that correct?
You may have got me on that one.
Okay, well, just know he's really
good.
Just know he's good. And he's one of the guys that I would be focusing on if you're a Texas Tech fan, is a guy that could get to the backfield. He's a guy that can take up space in a gap, or he can really kind of bull rush a guy and really get to the quarterback. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for some of the guys on the interior and the outside of the offensive line for Texas Tech, if we're being frank. And I think that's something to watch, Don. I don't know if there's any comments you had before we kind of switched it, but I think looking at that Houston defense, they return 8 starters from last year. A lot of it is on the corner and kind of the back end of it. But if you're looking at the front in terms of guys that could make plays, Anini is someone that I honestly believe could be a difference maker for them.
Yeah, he's got it. He's got Tech recruited way back when he
yes.
was in high school. I don't know. I feel like Tech is going to be in pretty good position there in terms of pass protection, because T.J. Stormont's, he's played a lot of college football, and he played in the Big 12 last year. He didn't have the question about how will he handle the Big 12, because he did it last year.
Yeah.
Had some, has some credentials to show for it. And Caleb Rogers moving over to the right tackle.
Caleb Rogers and Josh Berger are the two that I'm focused on. Cause Josh, I think it's fair to say he struggled at times. And I think that's something that we could see if he's worked on and see if he can, play at that Big 12 level. I know that's something that the coaches want, because he came from a place where, again, he was a transfer with experience. But I think the Big 12 was a little much for him early on, but I think he finally got a little bit of consistency. And I think it's interesting to see what he'll be able to do going into his second year, maybe with a little bit of more strength and conditioning with the weight staff. I'm interested to see how he plays this year.
And of course, he'll be doing it at a new position.
Yes.
Sliding inside and playing right guard. So a little I started to say a little less demanding, maybe less demanding from a pass protection standpoint.
Oh, absolutely, because you're not the only guy.
But as he pointed out, though, on pass protection, you kind of are mainly focused on what's coming to your outside shoulder versus inside guard. And you got to defend both
multiple spots
and inside.
But no, absolutely, man. I think that could be an interesting one. Obviously, you don't, but I think with the receivers that Tech has, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup with two guys that have been there forever for Houston, at least from their defensive backs. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I don't know if there's anything that stands out to you in terms of Houston, because I know I'll talk to Joseph Duarte after this portion of the podcast specifically about Houston, but I don't know if there's anything you think that Texas Tech can take advantage of from their defense.
I think you feel like simply, okay, you're Texas Tech, you're a Big 12 school, you're better than Houston. You have better players. I mean, those guys are an AAC. They're a group of five school, and they haven't even been a good group of five team the last couple of years, because 2 years ago they were 4-6, or pardon me, last year 3-5, I think the year before 1-4, something like that. Mm-hmm. They probably had about the same record that you have had, Texas Tech. So you should simply be better man against man than U of H. And Houston has kind of done, Dana Holgerson's done a little bit what Matt Wells has done, because we talked about Texas impact guys in the transfer portal, and U of H also has gone pretty heavy.
He also redshirted heavy too that first year for a lot of people forget.
So, they got the Tech guys, like you got Keyshawn Carter from Tech, starting former wide receiver. Their nose guard's Latrell Bankston. He was a Iowa State guy. Mm-hmm. A couple of years, 3.5 sacks last year for Matt Campbell's team. They have a tight end from Minnesota, who's their second team tight end. They have a wide receiver who was a full-time starter 2 years ago for UCLA. So, I think similar to Tech in that regard, a bunch of guys who are kind of new to their program over the last year or two. But again, I go back to if you're a Big 12 school playing a AAC school, you should be simply better, have more talent, more depth, and that should show itself, especially in the second half on Saturday night.
It'll be interesting, because I think you and I have talked about this already, and I'm sure people have asked us ad nauseum about it. I know we answered it during our weekly mailbag segment of our podcast, but this is a big game for both of those guys. They haven't had the starts or the wins and losses that you'd like in your first 2 years. Dana, I believe 3-5 last year during the pandemic year. Obviously, Matt Wells has had 4 win seasons the last 2 years, so certainly getting off to a good start is going to be good for both of these teams, because I think it's fair to say, Don, there are favorable schedules for both after this game. So if you're able to get a victory here, I think you can kind of put together a nice winning streak and get your fan base behind you before some big games, whether that's in conference or whatever. Again, you can.
Well, if you're Texas Tech, can you, though? If you beat Houston, Stephen F. Austin, and Florida International, how much are fans going to get behind you?
Hey, 3-0, baby. 3-0.
Man, Wells is going to have to do a whole bunch more than beat Houston, Florida International, and Stephen F. to
get fans. Here's the thing, Don. 3-0, that would already be one less win than you had all of last year. Now, granted, of last year, but then that's also one less than you had your first year. I think if you get that, then that puts you in a good position to get yourself bowl eligible, and I think that's really the goal here for Texas Tech is bowl eligibility. And not only that, if you're bowl eligible, that means you have 6-7 wins and the potential for maybe a 7th or an 8th win, depending on which win you get to by the end of the season. But essentially you can put yourself in a good position in terms of the wins and losses if you get a victory in this regular season opener for both teams. I think that's kind of where I'm at that one in terms of that.
Yeah. So, again, 6:00 on Saturday night, down at NRG Stadium. Game's going to be nationally televised on ESPN. It's not the biggest game of the night, but Tech and Houston will have a national TV audience on ESPN. So I think that'll about wrap it up for us before the game.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So we appreciate everybody for listening. And this, again, has been the Texas Tech Football Podcast brought to you by Lubbock Avalanche Journal, AJ Media. For AJ Media Sports Editor Carlos Silva Jr., I'm Don Williams, and we will talk to you again soon.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carlos Silva, sports editor for the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, bringing you another edition of the Red Raider podcast. And in this second edition that we do before Texas Tech takes on UH, we typically talk to the opposing team's beat writer, and that means I get to talk to a guy I've known for a long time, Joseph Duarte of the Houston Chronicle. How are you doing, JD?
Hey, Carlos. Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
No, appreciate it, man. Obviously, you're an expert of UH, so obviously a good deal to kind of talk to you, because I know a lot of Texas Tech fans, one, are just excited to obviously get some football going, hopefully with the routine starting back. I know everyone else uses the term normalcy. I want to call it a routine, hopefully, that starts to become something that happens down. But certainly everything looks positive in terms of that. It's going to be at a big stadium, NRG Stadium, 6 p.m. Saturday. But just to kind of get into things, I think the first thing I think that stands out with this matchup is you're going to have a new offensive coordinator for Texas Tech, Sonny Cumbie. He's an air raid guy. Dana Holgerson, also another air raid guy, who was a Tech assistant. I guess, do you kind of see these two offenses being similar? Has Dana really mentioned anything about what the defense can kind of expect from Texas Tech?
No, there's certainly familiarity across the board, you know, on both sides, actually. But in terms of offense, you know, these are both two men that are, you know, branches off of the air raid, tree of Hal Mumme and Mike Leach and that group. So, you know, Dana Holgerson joked with us earlier in the week. He said that, you know, there aren't a lot of secrets that he can keep. Just because people know what they're going to do, but the ones that he does have, he wants to keep them in the back pocket. So, you know, and that even goes back to, you know, his West Virginia days on the defensive side with Gibson now at Texas Tech. And I believe, you know, the defense that they ran when they were at West Virginia, Gibson has brought a little bit of that to Lubbock. So, it's just familiar. There's a lot of familiarity. So, for the most part, I don't think there's going to be any surprises, but I think you'll see some wrinkles and some gamesmanship to see who can get an edge, because you know, there's not a lot that probably either side doesn't know about the other.
Absolutely. Well, one thing that certainly Texas Tech fans know is Tyler Shuck. He's a experienced quarterback that came from Oregon. I know everyone's going to talk about him, but I think just looking at Clayton Toon, he's a guy that's got experience as well. I guess, what can you kind of tell the Texas Tech fans that aren't familiar with Mr. Toon that's been there a couple years there at Houston?
Well, you know, he's been – this will be his third year as the starter, but it's really – you can make a claim that, yeah, this is his third year, but this will be his fourth season seeing games. But this is the most normal going into the season that he's been. His first year, he came in at the very end when De'Aaron King suffered a – knee injury. They ended up having to burn his rest, including De'Aaron King. So he came in and played the last games after the fourth game. So he played the last eight. And then last year was COVID, where they had all the cancellations. So he's just glad to finally just know that he's going into a season that's not interrupted, or he's not having to play a role. But as Dana Holgerson put it, even though he's in year three, you know, if he doesn't make any progress or he doesn't get better, that's going to be on Holgerson. Holgerson has typically had quarterbacks do well by year three in the program or in the system, and they feel like that they've gotten that way with Clayton Toon. As far as him talent-wise, strong arm, very much a threat to run. Where things get a little dicey is, towards the end of last year, he was turnover prone, threw a lot of interceptions. Has to really know how to protect himself, protect the ball, and also his body. So those are two areas, because they don't have a proven guy as a backup. So he'll get if this is a close game, he'll get the entire load of snaps, and Houston's going to have to kind of hold their breath throughout the season that nothing happens to Clayton Toon, because he's had hamstrings, he's had some other nicks and bruises, and missed a game here and there. They can't afford that. this season because they just don't have anybody behind him.
Once again, this is the Red Raider podcast talking to Joseph Duarte of the Houston Chronicle, University of Houston beat writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Joseph_Duarte. He's talking a little bit about Clayton Tune. Going to go a little bit more into the offense, Joseph. I was looking at the depth chart that was released earlier this week. One guy that's familiar with Texas Tech fans, Keshawn Carter, he's starting at one of the wide receiver spots. What have you seen from him, and what's made him such a valuable asset for Houston to obviously make a guy that transferred? Now he's potentially a starter now.
Well, unfortunately, we don't get to watch practices. We did get 30 minutes of some pretty intense stretching and some one-on-one drills. But talking with coaches and teammates, he's really impressed. And by that, I mean he's brought a little bit of a veteran leadership to that wide receiver room that really doesn't have much of that. And one thing that his teammates have noticed that he's a very aggressive player, and he invites contact. He doesn't shy away or get scared of that play across the middle, almost daring you at times, it seems, to take that hit. So he brings a toughness that they also sorely need. But, you know, when they got him and when he signed, this was going to be the role. They needed a number two, a number three, and depending on how comfortable he gets with Clayton Tune, he could possibly be a primary guy with Nathaniel Dell and Jeremy Singleton. But it wasn't a surprise that he's number one at one of the spots on the depth chart. But taking that with a grain of salt, you know, we later found out that the depth chart that they put out deliberately wasn't as updated as we would have thought, part of the gamesmanship with Dana Holgorsen, but yeah. It is safe to say that Keshawn Carter is one of the three starters on offense at the receiver position.
Last question about the offense. Running back is going to be something I would think by committee, Mobacar being kind of that guy that's going to be the number one, I guess, assume. But I guess from your perspective in terms of what they have at the running back position, how can you see that playing out against the Texas Tech defensive line that seems to be pretty stout going into this contest?
Well, Mobile's never been a number one here, whether it's been injuries or just kind of splitting the load. And I think Tayshaun Henry is the number one going in to the season. And what they'll do is, at least in this game, I think you'll see a number of guys getting carries. They like Tayshaun in like a short yardage type situation. Moba is really good in stretches. He's a big physical back that seems like he gets 9 or 10 yards a carry. And then they have Chandler Smith, who's another, he's a 6-year senior, hasn't got a lot of playing time, but he's also a guy that really moves the chain and bulks of yards. And then the one we're really anxious to see down here is Alton McCaskill. He's a local kid. He was a freshman. He was listed as one of the top running backs in the country, and he was a late decision. And he picked Houston, which surprised a lot of people because he had a lot of Power Five offers. This is your speedster. This is your breakaway back. And are very impressive. So they could throw anywhere from 3 to 4 running backs at Texas Tech, on Saturday.
So I know there was a name you mentioned there that probably piqued some interest, Tayshaun Henry. I know I've already mentioned Keshawn Carter. Alex Hogan was another transfer from Texas Tech. As you mentioned before, maybe the depth chart was a little bit of gamesmanship. I guess what can you tell us about Tayshaun and Alex Hogan, the cornerback that did transfer to UH, in terms of what their potential playing time could be this weekend or going into the future?
Well, there's probably not much I can tell you about Tayshaun that U of H certainly doesn't know from that meeting that they had a few years ago in Lubbock. I believe he scored 4 touchdowns in that game. So I guess if you can't beat him, you try to get him to join you. And they certainly got a guy that has proven that he can find the end zone and he can be one of those guys. And they need a running back to duplicate that. They haven't had a running back here since probably the Peach Bowl year of 2015, that they kind of like one of those ground and pound guys that is going to get close to 1,000 yards or anywhere, close to that. They've had guys that have been injured. They've had guys that didn't pan out. So if you can get a guy like Tayshaun that can come in and establish himself as that every down back, or at least someone and is going to be in there a majority of the time. That's going to be huge for Houston. As far as Alex Hogan, I don't – his role is certainly going to be in a backup role. He's behind two really, really solid corners that Houston has in Demarion Williams, who was an all-American athletic conference performer last year, and then Marcus Jones, who's an all-American return specialist, but he also has the credentials as a corner. I believe, according to Pro Football Focus, he had like the tied for the second best coverage grade entering this season. So he's the definition of a lockdown corner. They really feel like those two corners are going to be really good for Houston in matchups. So Alex Hogan will come in and sub packages, but really, you know, he's down the line in terms of playing time right now. But the way that the secondary lines up, you know, they now have depth, and I'm assuming that he gets his share of playing time as well this year.
As we wrap things up, we'll talk to defense. Speaking with Sonny Cumbie, the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech, he said the one thing that stands out about Houston is their defense and the experience that comes back. Eight starters returning, so certainly you're going to have at least a little bit of an edge there just in terms of guys knowing what's going on or just, you know, kind of playing up to a veteran standard, if you will. I guess what are you kind of expecting from the defense that has – obviously, a lot of guys on the defensive line that have, you know, kind of made it a habit to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, you know, Houston's really flipped the switch or the script on its defense the last couple of years. You know, Dana's first year, I mean, he was just dealing with a lot of holes, a lot of depth issues, roster mismanagement from the previous coaching staffs. But you look at it now, they had competition in the spring and in camp, and you look at the two deep, you know, the one that we feel is the accurate two deep, and they've got guys that were past starters that, you know, that are backups now, and they are really deep at a lot of the positions. And, you know, starting with the defensive front, you know, they've got a two guys on the edge, Derek Parrish and David Anini, who are considered, you know, the starters that are the rush options there. They can also bring a DeAnthony Jones into the game. He's a JUCO product that I'm told he has one of the best and quickest first steps that a number of coaches have seen. And then they went out and got a Big 12 guy that Tech should be familiar with, and Latrell Bankston, who played at Iowa State last year and racked up, you know, nearly double digits or close to double digits, if I'm not mistaken, on sacks. So they feel like they're 10 to 12 deep in terms of rotation on the D-line. You move to the second level with the linebackers. They moved Deontay Anderson from safety to linebacker. Bigger body. They feel like he'll excel there rather than when he was playing safety. And then they get their kind of their team captain back in Donovan Mooden, who missed most of last year because of injury. That linebacker group is considered the heart and soul of the defense. And then it just sets up for the secondary. We talked about the corners. And then they have two performers that were former Power 5 safeties. Thabo Nwaki, who was at Oklahoma State, and then you had Hassan Hippolyte, who was at Colorado. Both of those guys have been really good additions in the time that we've seen them. So, yeah, just looking at this team and looking at the numbers, I mean, they've got talent across the board. That's why I'm really not sold that this is going to be a high-scoring game. You know, people remember this isn't exactly the Case Keenum Cougars, and that's – not the same, you know, Mike Leach, all those great quarterbacks that they had. No offense to Tyler Shuck, but, you know, these aren't the same two teams that people remember for putting up all the points years ago.
So I guess kind of taking all that into account, when you kind of look at these two teams, if you're watching this game on Saturday, what is Texas Tech doing or what is UH doing correctly that will make you feel like, okay, this game is turning for the Cougars or this game is turning for the Red Raiders?
Well, get off the field for one if you're on the defense, and I think that's where what they didn't have in the past they have now. They can get those stops, they can get the ball back, and ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, Clayton Tune's got to direct this offense. So they're coming off of one of their, you know, they scored 30 points last year. That was like their third worst in 15 years average. They've got to get points on the board, and that means whether or not, you know, it's hitting one of those receivers that we talked about. Or finding the end zone through some combination of the running game and getting that going. So I think it starts with the defense. If they get some, you know, three and outs, they, you know, they haven't been a team that forces a lot of turnovers lately. So that will also be key. If they can make that work, that's where they have the edge. If you're Texas Tech, you know, I think for one, the Houston offensive line is still a work in progress. They upgraded at center with Cody Rusty from La Tech. I would test Houston right out the gate. I mean, they're working with, you know, several new guys on that line just to see how it works. See if they put pressure on Clayton Tune. He has shown to rattle at times when teams have done that. So maybe go that route and, you know, just got to convert. You know, I don't know how much of a field goal kicking team Tech is or what their kicker situation is, but touchdowns will rule the day, and I don't think you'll see very many field goals from either team if this gets into one of those back and forth games. But those are two areas that I think if either side does that, you know, they have a good chance in the game.
It's interesting to bring that up because Jonathan Garibay was just named the starting kicker for Texas Tech. It was kind of a back and forth affair between him and Trey Wolf. Trey Wolf obviously had one of his better years, and last year went 1-for-5 and kind of lost that job after Jonathan Garibay, at least in my opinion, won it after that game-winning kick against Baylor and went, I want to say, 4-for-4 in that contest. So if it does come down to that, I'm interested to see how that happens or just the first kick, frankly, because I know that's one thing Coach Wells has been talking about with the field goal guys is you just got to be consistent. And essentially that's what Jonathan Garibay showed, and that's what he talked about. So it'll be interesting to see that, and then not only that, but then for Houston as well, man. So I'm interested to see if that does kind of turn out that way.
And on the kickoff side, you know, you just can't give – Marcus Jones the ball. You can't let him touch the ball. This is an electric guy who will be playing there in the NFL. This is his last year. We've seen him on punts and on kickoff returns do his thing and score touchdowns. So I don't think that they'll kick in his direction very much at all on Saturday. And if they do, you know, that could be a big mistake that plays into Houston's hand.
Once again, that's Joseph Duarte, University of Houston beat writer for the Houston Chronicle. I know you're a busy man, Joseph. I'm going to get you out on these two questions because I know you're a busy guy, and I appreciate the time that you have taken here. What's the prediction? You don't necessarily have to have a score, but I guess just how you see things maybe playing out. And then for our fans and Texas Tech guys or Texas Tech peeps that are coming out to Houston, what's a go-to restaurant that you like or somewhere to kind of send them to?
Right. We'll start with the restaurant. You know, I mean, you guys got Hattie Mae's out there, so you know, you guys know your barbecue and stuff like that. But
well, Sam Kahn gave me one. I'm not going to say it now because
you know, I like Killens. If you can get in, the line's a little long. They have two locations now, one in Pearland, which is about, you know, 20 minutes from the U of H campus, 25 minutes, and then there's one inside the city now. They have a little bit of a barbecue and a Mexican restaurant side of it. So
yeah.
A lot of good brisket inside those enchiladas with cheese, so can't go wrong there. I know people like Papacitos and Papados, but I'm trying to branch them out a little bit and try something a little
bit. In other words, don't be Don.
I would place Sam mentioned for people to go to.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'll probably mention it at the first part of this podcast. It's going to be the second part, but yeah, I didn't want to kind of give stuff away. But yeah, like I said, man, last question, I guess, how do you kind of see this going?
You know, I don't think it's a runaway. I think going into the fourth quarter, it's a one-possession game. Mm-hmm. I think it turns on a turnover late. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see this as about a Houston 28-24 game. I don't think it gets out of hand. It's interesting. Are these teams playing for American Athletic Conference membership, or are they playing for Big 12 membership? So if you're Houston, maybe you want to join Tech and the remaining eight that are in the Big 12. Or if you're Texas Tech, are you looking for your new home and what it's going to be like? So this could be the first round of eliminations or interviews for conference realignment, but I'm going to go Houston, which I probably wouldn't have said that, you know, a few weeks ago, but Houston 28-24.
Interesting. And the other little layer that we can add to that is Dana and Matt are looking to hopefully get off on the right foot, because the last couple of years have not been good for both of them during their three-year tenures of both of their programs. So certainly that'll be something else to kind of watch for.
Certainly, Holgorsen, Carlos, this is a big year for him. They're at a crossroad.
He's making
$4 million now a year, which is unheard of here at Houston and really in a group of five. So the schedule after this game is very favorable for Houston. I'd say anywhere from 9 to 10 wins. It is the floor, and anything less is a big disappointment. So he's not on the hot seat yet, but it'd be nice for them to get off to a good start and maybe show what people have been waiting for around here for 2 years.
It's Joseph Duarte once again of the Houston Chronicle. Appreciate the time, man, and we'll see you when I head up to Houston, my man.
Anytime. Have a safe trip.
Once again, that's Joseph Duarte, Houston Chronicle. I'm Carlos Silva from the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, sports editor for the newspaper. Appreciate y'all listening to the Red Raider podcast. We'll talk to you next week.